Speakers' podiums had to be solid and bolted to the floor. Once in the 32 campaign, this was overlooked, and the podium and the candidate crashed to the floor. Although reporters were present, the incident was not mentioned in the newspapers, nor were pictures taken of this fall, although it was seen by photographers. And this was because FDR had made it a rule during his first campaign for governor that photographers were not to take pictures of him looking crippled or helpless. His actual words, taken as he was being helped out of a car in the presence of newsreel cameramen, was, "No movies of me getting out of the machine, boys." And from then on, remarkably, no such pictures were taken. Should the president notice someone in the crowd violating the interdiction, he would point out the offender, and the Secret Service would move in, seize the camera, and expose the film. Not only did the photographers go along with this injunction, so did the reporters. According to master reporter John Gunther, throughout FDR's career, quote, "news stories seldom, if ever, mentioned that he was a cripple, and the fact that he used a wheelchair was never printed at all." FDR was the favorite subject of political cartoonists. Never once, so far as is known, did they portray him in a wheelchair, on crutches, or otherwise impaired. He was often portrayed, in fact, as running, jumping, or even fighting in a boxing ring. Fellow politicians avoided references to his condition. Al Smith provided the example. Responding to a question, he said, "The governor doesn't have to be an acrobat. We do not elect him for his ability to do a double back flip or a handspring." Now, this extraordinary suppression of an important aspect of a president's person, I think, would be impossible today in the world of investigative journalism and television. That Roosevelt pulled it off in the 30s is a tribute to his close working relationship with the press. I think, however, this veil of silence about the extent of the handicap required something else, the unspoken acquiescence of everyone, Roosevelt, the press, and the American people. In a very real sense, the great nation does not want a crippled man as its president, does not wish to think of its leader as impaired. Roosevelt was undeniably a crippled man. Literally millions of people saw him moving down his railroad ramp, bent over like a praying mantis, or hobbling painfully on the arm of one of his sons. Roosevelt was obviously crippled. Nevertheless, the nation wanted this man with all his magnificent qualities as its leaders. So an agreement was struck. His handicap was simply denied by everyone. The generally accepted line was that FDR had had polio, yes, and was now a bit lame. He'd been paralyzed, but now he was recovered. He was, to use his own words, a cured cripple. The thought that America, a nation crippled by the Great Depression, should choose a crippled president to lead it back to prosperity was unthinkable, and so in the Roosevelt manner, it was unthought. This denial, Roosevelt's denial of his handicap, was so complete that at times it had aspects of the surreal. FDR's legs were paralyzed and useless. He lived confined to a wheelchair, except for the short periods he was assisted to a standing position on his braces. Nevertheless, in reply to an editor's question, Roosevelt answered, quote, "As a matter of fact, I don't use a wheelchair at all, except a little kitchen chair on wheels to get about my room while dressing." Another time, he said in a prepared news release that his attack of polio had left him no residual problem other than, quote, "a certain clumsiness of locomotion," unquote. Furthermore, FDR insisted that everyone else participate in this denial. He once lost his temper with the editor of the magazine Liberty over a draft profile of the president. Quote, "Mr. Johnson," demanded FDR, "there is only one statement in this article that I want corrected. The author says in this line here that I have never entirely recovered from infantile paralysis." "Never recovered what?" I've never recovered the complete use of my knees. Will you fix that? So in a triumph of will, FDR convinced his family, his party, the press, and the country that his paralysis was unimportant. Furthermore, he had convinced himself of this. With this conviction and with this, the first-class character that he had, he was able to build a life of great achievement. No matter how strong his denial, however, he was crippled. Was, I believe, a key event of his life, and I believe his illness and his lengthy rehabilitation served to shape and alter his character. And I must say it's difficult and foolhardy to attempt to assess a man's character. And Roosevelt, who was a man, as the psychiatrist Carl Jung said, a man with, quote, a perfectly ruthless, highly versatile, superior but impenetrable mind. It's particularly difficult to figure him out. But here are a few points I would make about his character. It's not unusual in a man or animal that when one faculty should be strengthened as a compensation for the loss of another. In this sense, the charm and power of Roosevelt's personality, I believe, were magnified after the paralysis of his legs. By means of various tricks that actors use, acquired both consciously and unconsciously, Roosevelt was able to project from his wheelchair a personality that dominated all others. From his chair, he radiated a warmth that filled the very corners of a room. The characteristic tilt of his head, the famous smile, the infectious, hearty laugh, the jaunty cigarette holder, such props as the military cape, the old floppy fedora. It was by such means as these that he was able to project and enlarge his presence. Trapped in a chair, he had to rely upon others to do things for him. Thus, whether to order, beg, or cajole, he was caused to be manipulative to get things done, to enforce his will. Not just to order an invasion, but to get someone to bring him a glass of water. Trapped in his room, he was dependent upon the reports of others to find out what was happening in the land, and dependent upon the gossip of others to learn what was happening within his administration. Frustrated by his condition, repressed as that frustration might be, it surfaced, I believe, in the occasional sadistic pleasure he found in stirring up bureaucratic disputes, setting one official against another, Harry Hopkins against Ickes. The paralyzed president in his chair in the Oval Office was, if you will, like an invalid confined to his bed in a sick room, taking pleasure from an ant colony. It is surely not surprising if upon occasion the invalid takes a stick to poke up a little action in the colony. Roosevelt's paralysis was his one and only major experience with failure. From it, perhaps, he learned about humiliation and loss. This appears to have helped to make him a more compassionate person. During the pre-polio 1920 vice presidential campaign, some found the young FDR to be cocky and arrogant. His campaign swing out west was not a success. It was canceled midway. After his 7-year struggle with polio and rehabilitation, his interest in others and his appeal to the voters both seemed genuine and strong. People sensed his identification with them in a way which hitherto had been lacking. It's been said that polio was FDR's log cabin. During Roosevelt's 7 years of rehabilitation, he was able to meet and talk to and become friends with people of a sort and class he had never met before. Struggling on his braces and crutches down to the end of the driveway at Hyde Park, FDR came to meet the locals, the mailman, the delivery boys, neighboring tenants. He met them not as lord of the manor passing in his limousine, but as a human being visibly struggling with a problem, as his neighbors struggled with theirs. So also in Warm Springs, driving his open Ford about the back roads of Georgia, in the severe agricultural depression of the 1920s, FDR came to understand problems and fears of the farmers, the tenants, the poor whites, the blacks of Red Clay, Georgia. He would never have had such an experience had he continued the life of the New York society attorney broker with a career in politics. And of course, this 7-year hiatus from public life served to buy him time. When he contracted polio in 21, he was already a national figure, a presidential contender. The 7-year rehabilitation period allowed his wife and his aides to build a nationwide network of correspondents, friends, and supporters. And without polio, his career would have peaked much earlier. And when you're running for president, timing is all. And the presidency is like the brass ring on the merry-go-round. It must be grabbed as it comes by. Without polio, Roosevelt would have been forced to run in the 1920s, a period of Republican ascendancy. I believe it may also be said that polio and Roosevelt's efforts at devising rehabilitation therapy techniques helped to develop in him the management techniques he used to bring the nation through the Depression and the war. He always saw himself as his own chief doctor and orthopedist. He was delighted when they called him Dr. Roosevelt at Warm Springs. And it was no accident that when he was in the White House, he called himself Dr. New Deal, or that after Pearl Harbor, he traded that title in for Dr. Win the War. Dr. Roosevelt had struggled against imponderable odds in his own rehabilitation. The odds for the rehabilitation of the nation after the Depression, or for prevailing in war, were no worse. These were some of the effects which polio had on Roosevelt. Perhaps the biggest effect of all was caused by the deception which FDR found it necessary to practice. Given the social attitudes of the time, it was probably true that the deception was necessary to get elected, and it made his leadership role easier to carry out. The deception was not easy. It drained FDR's energy, diverted his attention, and emotionally, it served to enforce his isolation. It became, in fact, a barrier which no one could pierce. And now I have a word about post-polio syndrome. Roosevelt was in the White House for over 12 years. At the first, he was in robust good health, surrounded by persons who adored and loved him. Gradually over the years, these people fell away, sick or dying. The responsibilities of the presidency did not decrease, just the reverse. With the advent of World War II, Roosevelt assumed responsibilities of quite overwhelming weight and importance. In the last year or so of his life, the last year or so of the war, President Roosevelt experienced a marked decline in his physical condition. For various reasons, wartime pressures, he no longer stood on braces. He no longer had a daily swim. When he attempted to resume standing on braces for the 1944 campaign, some 14 months since he'd had them on previously, Roosevelt found it extremely painful and tiring. He was now routinely lifted in and out of cars, in and out of bed. He found it difficult to drive his own hand control at Hyde Park. And this was something he had loved doing. It had been his greatest pleasure, was driving down here in Warm Springs or around Hyde Park. And he asked others to mix the martinis for him, a task he had always taken unto himself. His hand shook so he had difficulty lighting cigarettes. And I believe that upon occasion he had difficulty even holding a pen. He complained of various aches and pains. I do not know whether this 18-month decline can be characterized as post-polio syndrome. Whatever it was serious. Thus, in 1944, late 44, Roosevelt found himself in failing strength, largely without a network of emotional support, in the face of infinite demands upon his strength and wisdom. Alone and failing, it is not surprising that he slid into a state of severe emotional depression. He developed a host of somatic symptoms. FDR lost his appetite. He complained of sleeplessness, constipation, fatigue. His mind wandered. He found it difficult to concentrate. He had other complaints: high blood pressure, heart disease, gallbladder problems. As the war was concluding, FDR died at the age of 63 of a massive cerebral hemorrhage. Both his mind and his body had worn out. And that's the end of my completed remarks, written remarks. And now I have some pictures from the scrapbook, if you'd like to see them, and if someone would show me how to plug in the machine. Want me to tell me what I do?
Let's see.
Okay.
And it.
You focus it with one. Focus it with the dial and push the red button.
Yeah, that one right there focuses.
Okay.
And this one right here.
Okay. There's something like 50,000 still photographs up at the Hyde Park Presidential Library. There are only two known of Roosevelt in a wheelchair, and this is one of them. That's a wheelchair he designed. He took an old kitchen chair, sawed the legs off, had wheels glued on the bottom. The standard chairs of the day were impractical wooden things that wouldn't fit in the trunk of a car, as this will, and wouldn't go through narrow doors, as this will. There are very few pictures of Roosevelt's legs. You can see that his upper body is well developed. This was taken in about 1923, two or three years after polio. He couldn't have sat long on the edge of the pool because he had no protection over his hip bones, and that hurts. Those are his braces with the pelvic band. That's a strange picture. No one can understand why he'd take his pants off to go fishing. You can see he's wearing braces. And it's also an awkward way to go fishing because there's no back support. And should the canoe tip, he'd be overboard. Here's a picture of Roosevelt down at Warm Springs in the early days. This is referred on the back of the original photograph. It says, Franklin, the first day he stood alone without braces. Well, it's true he's not wearing braces, but I think he's leaning more on the arms of his doctor and his orderly than he is standing on his own two feet. Also, there's something behind him. It may be a wheelchair, but it may also be a prop. Now you see how he looked before he learned to walk with the cane. That was taken at Hyde Park, and that's Al Smith and other Democratic officials. Now that's as he was elected governor. Standing next to him is Lieutenant Governor Lehman. And Lehman has his thumb stuck in his vest so that his arm is steady, and Roosevelt's hanging on with his left hand. Right hand with the cane, you notice he has the index finger extended so he can place. He makes a tripod of 2 feet in the cane. You see that again in this picture where he's standing with Basil O'Connor down here in Warm Springs. He's leaning with his back up against the wall and pressing down with his index finger so it gives stability. Now this is an example of how he moved. He's coming into the room on the arm of James Roosevelt. And because of his muscle layout, he moved his legs forward by swinging them out and forward at the same time. So he sort of toddled along as he walked into a room. But yet it's astonishing, they say, that all those people watching him, afterwards, if you would ask, was the president crippled, they'd say, no, no, walked a little slowly. Now this is how he gets out, I mean, he's getting out of his limousine. He always used a 7-passenger open touring car, and he would keep the jump seat down so that he could sit on that as he was having his braces straightened and pulled to a standing position. The Secret Service are getting the braces together. James is standing behind them. Secret Service wearing white hats. James is in the tent, the fedora, and he's going to take over as soon as Roosevelt's heisted to his feet. Now that's the ramp he used coming down from, well, obviously from the railroad car. After he'd been in the White House for 8 years, the railroad industry, Pullman Company, built him a special railroad car with an elevator in it so that he could be lowered to the ground without bothering with the ramp. This is the kind of picture you would never see. This is from a home movie of a family friend of the Roosevelts. And that's how the president was carried about a lot. Reporter John Gunther said he was in the White House one day in 1944 when Roosevelt was carried in arms into the office. And he said he was staggered by how small his body looked by comparison with the head. But that was after Roosevelt had begun to lose weight. Now, when the president spoke to Congress, there was a ramp was constructed on the left-hand side of the speaker's podium so that he could enter the room, and then the ramp had railings on both sides so that he could walk up that ramp as though it were parallel bars. Well, they were parallel bars. Now, if you're president of the United States, you live in a ramped world, and it's wonderful. This was the occasion of the state funeral for the death of Speaker Bankhead, and the Secret Service moved in and raised the whole level of the street so that the president could walk in on the same level and in the same way as the other mourners. In due course, they stopped building ramps for the president and built ramps for the president's car. This was built so he could address a rally of defense workers. He drove in an open car up at the top of that ramp, and you can see him, he's up there speaking from the back seat of the car. And this is my last photograph. This is the other known photograph of Franklin Roosevelt in a wheelchair, and he's holding his little dog Fala in his lap. And I want to thank you very much.
This concludes tape 6B.